Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Rita Allen Foundation, investing in transformative ideas to promote breakthrough solutions to significant problems. Learn more at ritaallen.org. And from the May Family Foundation, supporting college reentry, a practical semester-long program in New York City helping young adults with mental health challenges make a successful return to college. More at collegereentry.org.
Electric car sales are on the rise, with new models offering longer range at lower prices.
Once you hit that accelerator, you go. So I think it'll put a smile on anyone's face.
Is this the moment they go mainstream? And will government support for clean cars continue?
The consensus is that nobody knows what the heck is going to happen next. Nobody.
Electric cars, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, today at 4 on 104.3 KTOO.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather Daily at 7:30. At 8, learn how diabetes can compromise blood circulation and how effects can be managed in the documentary Good Cardiovascular and Diabetic Health. At 9, the Alaska Community Action on Toxics hears reports from working groups on environmental health. Gavel Alaska returns at 10. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Welcome to a Juno afternoon on Monday, February 13th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get a preview of this week's League of Women Voters Lunch and Learn. Steve Sue Wing will be here with a rundown of Tuesday's Mudroom Storytelling event. And we'll learn about tomorrow night's photography exhibit about hunger in Alaska called Nothing Runs on Empty. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local, on a Juneau afternoon. Currently 47 degrees at the Juneau International Airport.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. A legal effort to halt construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline goes to federal court in Washington, D.C. for the third time. Judge James Borsberg is hearing arguments in the complaint originally filed last week by the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe also joined the suit. The same judge denied two previous requests to halt pipeline work. The legal challenge asks for an injunction on construction because the pipeline under Lake Oahe in North Dakota threatens water the tribes rely on for drinking and for religious ceremonies. The Great Plains Tribal Chiefs Association also filed an amicus brief saying that the continued construction of the pipeline harms the free exercise of Native beliefs and continues historical drama stemming from the federal government's consistent failure to live up to its obligations under treaties in general and with the Great Sioux Nation in particular. Meanwhile, U.S. military veterans are traveling to the site where pipeline construction is resuming. Organizers of the effort say they will act as human shields to what some organizers refer to as a mass resistance. One veterans group, calling itself Veteran Stand, is about halfway to its $500,000 fundraising goal on GoFundMe.com. The actions come less than a week after the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers canceled what would have been a costly and time-consuming environmental review the agency said was needed 2 months ago. In his annual address Monday, National Congress of American Indian President Brian Clatesby said Congress and the President should work with Native nations to receive the best, most cost-effective economic development solutions. It was the first address since Donald Trump took over as president. Clatesby said under the previous Obama administration, Indian people enjoyed the most successful government-to-government relationship since the formation of the United States. He spoke of the importance of the federal government upholding its responsibility for Indian education and health care, among other things. He also said the government and companies benefit from mutual agreement.
Partnerships have proven to generate the highest return on investment, for they avoid the high costs of conflict between governments. Work with us to identify and implement win-win solutions.
In response to an audience question, Cladsby said the Dakota Access Pipeline Project is garnering significant attention all over the country and highlights the need for early and adequate consultation with tribes. More than 500 young people came together at a recent conference in Canada's western province of Saskatchewan. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the conference, called Ignite the Life, was aimed at allowing young people to talk about what they hear, see, and feel as a way to prevent suicide.
The conference in Saskatoon was called to highlight what many Native leaders describe as a suicide crisis in their communities. The goal of this conference is prevention, and registration filled up so quickly that hundreds of people were turned away, and the event exceeded all expectations. The conference comes after a rash of suicides in Native communities in northern Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Ontario. One of the main aspects of the meeting is what young people took away from the conference. Winona Seneko is a suicide survivor, and she was at the meeting to tell her story so that others could benefit.
I think it's important for kids nowadays to know that they're not alone and that, like, it happens to everyone. People from all walks of life suffer with sadness.
According to some organizations, such as Kids Help Phone, more than 20% of Canadian teens thought about suicide last year. When it comes to Native communities, that number jumps. The Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations officials say Native youth are five times more likely than non-Aboriginal youth to consider suicide. Organizers say the very fact that so many young people attended the conference shows them that they are not alone and that they have a network of people they can reach out to at any time when they need help. They say it's all about youth helping youth. The provincial government will take the feedback from this conference to help develop a strategy for the future in northern communities. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, February 13th. Scott Burton, your host, and it's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. In the studio now is Lorraine Jones. She is on the board of directors of the League of Women Voters. Welcome to the show, Lorraine.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here. So I understand this Wednesday, day after tomorrow, you have a lunch and learn at the Baranoff Hotel.
Yes. This is something that our wonderful member, Dr. George Brown, started last fall. And we've been trying to do a lunch and learn every other month. And since his passing, we've tried to pick up the pieces and keep going with his baby project. So anyway, we're excited to have one on this coming Wednesday at the Baranoff. And it starts at noon. And our speaker this time is going to be Ken Alper, who's the director of the Division of Tax, or Tax Division, in the Department of Revenue, and he's going to talk about the state budget.
Okay. And as you were telling me before the show, the Baranoff will put out a buffet, and you can either buy it for $17 and eat and listen if you like, or you can just come listen, right?
That's correct, yes. So our last one we did in December, it was Josie Banky of the Division of Elections, and she talked quite a bit about how it's impossible for us to have voter fraud here in Alaska. So very interesting considering all the recent headlines and or accusations or however you want to put it. It was very informative, and we're hoping it's going to be as informative this coming Wednesday.
Yeah. In case people don't know what the League of Women Voters is, tell us about it.
It's an organization of women and men that started over 100 years ago as a result of the women suffragettes got it started. And as they worked very hard to get women the right to vote. And like I said, today it includes women and men, and is a nonpartisan organization that just works really hard on issues that are important to everybody.
Sure. And I'm sure you spend a lot of time there on the board of directors, and you're also voter services. So
I do voter services. If anybody wants to have somebody available to register people to vote, they should certainly contact me, and I'll make sure that it happens.
Okay. What inspired you to become part of League of Women Voters? Why is it important to you?
I've always been involved in politics in one way or another. And I just feel that having the right to vote is really, really important. And it's really important to be an informed voter. And after I retired, I started putting my energies to things that were important to me, and this is one of them.
Okay. About how many members in Juneau's League?
In Juneau, we have over 100. I forget the exact number. I think the last time I heard it was 105, but and then I heard we had a couple more new members. So the recent Women's March has brought a few more people out, and we're happy to have more people join us.
Okay, so voter awareness, lunch and learns, boots on the ground during elections, right?
Yep,
so
we do. It's our organization that gets called on both as poll watchers and sometimes election officials contact us to help man the polls.
The polls.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Wednesday, this Lunch and Learn mm-hmm. with Ken Alper. What else is coming up?
Well, we're trying to do this every other month. So the next one will be in April. And I don't have a speaker just yet, but we're thinking it's going to be about redistricting and gerrymandering.
Remind us what gerrymandering means.
Well, gerrymandering means if they can skew the lines of the boundaries of the district, they can get more Republicans or Democrats or vice versa.
Okay. And then when's our next election?
For Juneau, the next one will be in October. I forget what the first Tuesday in October is, but that will be the municipal election. So, and that's the only one we have to worry about this year here in Juneau. Next year, we'll have to worry about the primary and the municipal and then the general again.
Okay. So. Let's see. Do you need more volunteers?
Oh, always can use some volunteers. And anybody that wants any contact information are welcome to call me. My cell phone is 321-6882.
And do you all have a presence on Facebook?
We do.
And a website?
We have both of those wonderful things. And you certainly contact us through that, too, and we'll put you in charge or in touch with the person who does the membership.
Okay. In the meantime, you can probably come talk to Lorraine at the Baranoff Hotel on Wednesday from noon to 1.
I'll be there.
And listen to Ken Alper. You said he's the director of the tax division?
He is. So if there's any questions about any new taxes, the marijuana taxes is under his purview, and where they think they're going with the budget.
There's even talk of a state income tax, isn't there?
There is. That's all right by me. I used to pay one. A long time ago, we paid a tax here. We use the services. We use the roads. You know, I have no problem personally with paying my fair share.
Okay. Lorraine Jones, thanks for coming down. Again, lunch on Wednesday at the Baranoff from noon to 1. Eat. Lunch is provided for a $17 buffet there at the Baranoff, or you can just come and listen. Lorraine, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Not that I can think of, except that we would love to have more people join us at our monthly meetings, and they get a hold of me at 321-6882. I can certainly tell you when and where that's going to be.
Do you have a set location?
Usually we're at the downtown library.
Okay.
And usually start at 4:30.
On which day of the week?
Mondays. It has moved a little bit. It's supposed to be the third Monday, but the third Monday, I think this month is a holiday, so it may be the fourth Monday instead.
And I bet you put that on your Facebook page.
Yes, I'm sure it is, or on my calendar. If they get a hold of me, I can tell them for sure.
All right, Lorraine. In the meantime, we'll see you on Wednesday for lunch.
All right. Enough.
Thank you.
Thanks a million, Scott.
Uh-huh.
Comes from the Copper Whale Inn in downtown Anchorage. Near business, arts, events, and more, with breakfast served daily. Reservations and information at copperwhale.com. The Copper Whale Inn, the gem of downtown Anchorage.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 13th. It's about 16 minutes past the top of the hour, and in the studio is Steve Sue Wing. He's on the board of directors of Mudrooms. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Scott.
Yes. So this event tomorrow, Up in the Air, is at 7 p.m.?
That's correct.
And please fill in the rest of the details.
Yep. 7 p.m. tomorrow night at Northern Lights Church, downtown Juneau. We start promptly at 7, and we take a $7 cash donation at the door. And get there early if you want a seat. Last event was very successful in that we packed the house and then some. And we're going to have 7 storytellers telling a 7-minute story that has to do with the theme Up in the Air. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure being in Alaska, we'll hear some aviation stories. So there's the literal and the figurative meaning of Up in the Air. But I think we're going to hear a lot of other stories that have to do with other topics as well.
And as you mentioned, the last event was very successful. It seems like mudrooms in general, the popularity is growing. How would you attribute that? What do people like about this event?
You know, one of the things I brought up before on Juno Afternoon, and actually with the storyboard as well, is this is a great event because we, as a storyboard member, you get to see it from on stage, you get to see it from behind the house, you get to see it as an audience member. And the one thing that I really appreciate is throughout the hour and a half programming, you rarely see someone on their cell phone. And so I think from all the places we go in our life, to have people put down their device and give full attention to something is something unique these days. And I think that people really identify with that because people are looking for human connection. And whether it's being able to find out something about their neighbor that they've known for decades or someone that just moved to town and why they're here, people are really interested in having that connection and having some similarities to draw to one another and to, you know, set us apart from one another. So I think that that's one of the things that really keeps the crowd coming back, and people that haven't been there before makes them interested about attending a Mudrooms event.
Rather than Facebook, it's like the real thing. It's like Face Place.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's one of those things in our society. We think that we're so connected, and I sit in so many groups that people feel disconnected. And so this is a true, authentic connection. And, you know, storytelling goes back for thousands of years. And so that's the way that humans have connected in the past, and we still connect that way very well today. And Mudrooms makes that possible for folks.
And I know you and the board members and all the storytellers do this volunteer. You collect $7 from each person, and that goes to other nonprofits, for example, in the community. Who's tomorrow night's proceeds going to?
Yeah, tomorrow night's proceeds, and for the next three events after tomorrow night, are going to go to the Polaris House. And I lifted this just off their website because I don't know very much about the Polaris House, but on their website, they say that they're a clubhouse community dedicated to the recovery from mental illness. One of the things that us as storyboard members tried to do frequently when we think about who is going to be the beneficiary of these events is we like to highlight an organization in town that maybe doesn't get highlighted as much. And so I think moving the funds onto the Polaris House, I think it's going to be a good thing, and also expose people to the Polaris House and what they do and the place that they fill in our community.
Okay. Who are your storytellers? And also let us know how you choose them.
Yeah, so our storytellers for tomorrow night are Sarah Hanen, who's also a storyboard member, Joel Curtis, Kathy Munoz, Larry Johansson, Brett Collins, Dave Noon, and Margot Connolly. We also have Jim and Michelle Hale will also be providing the music. I think they're bringing some friends along as well. For the first couple months of a season, usually we have to pound the pavement pretty hard and getting people to sign up for a Mudrooms event. And then after two or three events, usually a lot of the stories just come to us. So they either come through our website, mudrooms.org. You can see the list of our upcoming events there, and you can send us an email to volunteer to tell a story. And also we get Facebook messages from our Facebook page, Mudrooms, of people interested about telling a story on a certain topic. So it's not self-sustaining. We still do a lot of work in volunteering. We do still have spaces open. We've got three more events coming up in March is Rude Awakenings. April is Smokin'. And our last event of this season, six, is in May, and it's Subsistence and Survival. So for each of those events, we actually still need storytellers, and we need one more musician for April. So if you're you practice at Folk Fest and you want to perform in front of a Mudrooms audience, or you just want to practice in front of a Mudrooms audience, April might be your date to provide the music.
Some great themes here. I'm looking at your website right now, mudrooms.org. Is that fun, picking the themes for the season?
It is. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that we did a pretty good job this year, and a lot of times we pick a topic. Last year's October event was haunted. And we thought, oh, ghost stories, but it turned into a very dark evening. And so a lot of times, you know, we have some idea of what we think we're going to get, but we never know for sure. So it's amazing how people come to the themes with their experience and interpret the themes. We try to keep them as broad as possible so people can come from many different angles.
What would you say are some keys to good storytelling?
Wow. That's a really good question. Based on my experience of my laughing, my crying through a Mudrooms event, I think telling something that's personal. And so we've got a lot of storytellers in town that have been on stages all over town, bunch of events. But when they come to the stage and tell something that you can just feel the story in your bones, you can feel it in your head, you can feel it in your heart, and you know that it's something really personal, I think that that's probably the number one thing that I would attribute to a good story. So it's not really entertaining the audience, but it's getting up there and offering something of yourself. And so I think that takes a lot of trust. That's where Mudrooms also excels, and it's a very safe environment. But I think the people that get up on stage and tell something really personal to them really benefit as well. So it could be something that they've been trying to get off their chest for decades, or it could be, you know, some kind of story that happened in the past that no one knows about. And so to me, that really makes a good story, is when someone gets up there and it's clear that it's something that's really personal, part of their life.
Okay. What about sort of nuts and bolts wise? Do you recommend that people practice their story, to family members, stuff like that?
Yeah. So we do some story coaching. That's one of the great parts about the storyboard. Tom Cosgrove has really taken kind of this charge up, and Alita Bus as well. So, yeah, if someone wants to volunteer to tell a story, we definitely recommend practicing. You know, we've got a lot of good talkers here in town, but 7 minutes is a pretty hard criteria. And, you know, we're not going to pull you off a stage if you go over the 7 minute mark, but we're really striving to have them 7 minutes. So it really forces the storyteller into a concise story with the beginning, middle, and end, and to really think about what you're going to say and choose your words carefully. So definitely recommend practicing in front of your mirror, in front of your dog, you know, your partner. But if you feel like you want to kind of start that process of getting on stage, getting in front of a Mudrooms storyboard member and pitching your story or telling your story is always an option.
Okay. If somebody hasn't been to Northern Light United Church, how would you describe how to get there?
Ooh, it's on the flats. It's on, gosh, you're testing me. I don't know streets. If you know where the house on the flats is with all the Christmas lights, it's just across the street. So it could be hard to find this time of year because the lights aren't on, but I think most people in Juneau know where that's at.
Right there, kind of off Gold Creek. Yeah.
Yes.
I guess is it between 10th and 11th?
Oh, that sounds right.
Yeah, it's in there. Just follow the line. It's interesting going to a Mudrooms event. You see all these people sort of streaming in from different directions, so just follow somebody.
Yes, yes. And many of my friends that live on the flats know, you know, to be prepared and get home early and find a parking spot.
All right. Steve, what else would you like to add?
Well, I'm always about gratefulness. So Northern Lights Church, like to thank them for being our home for the last 3 years now. I believe it's three, maybe four. The Rookery, who's been a big supporter from the get-go. COPA, KTO, who's been a great supporter. Definitely appreciate getting on Juneau Afternoon and doing some PSAs as well. And Melissa Griffiths, who's our house photographer this year, has been taking some great photos that we can put up on our Facebook page and also our website. So just a shout out and a thank you to those folks that make it possible. Again, these are businesses that volunteer to support us, an all-volunteer storyboard, and a lot of effort goes into bringing this on 9 months out of the year.
All right. Thank you so much, Steve. We have a little extra time on the show today, so I randomly selected one of the Mudrooms stories that you all prepare for us. So graciously, you record the shows and then let us play them here on public media. So we're thankful to you for that. And I happened to pick Tony Newman's. So this is from the September Chichaco show.
Okay. Yeah, I remember the story.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Yep. Thanks, Scott.
Our next story is by Tony Newman. Tony was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the sixth of 11 children. After college, he found a job as a journalist for a news service in Washington, D.C., which then transferred him to Los Angeles, where this story begins. He had just about given up on finding the right woman, when... when there on the Santa Monica Promenade, he happened to meet a young lady who was born and raised in a place called Eagle River, Alaska. He swears he asked her out for coffee only because he was interested in learning more about what it was like to grow up on the last frontier, and he hoped to visit Alaska someday. So picture the two of them sitting there at the sidewalk table sharing a cup of tea and hot chocolate as we welcome Tony to the stage.
So, yeah, it was February 1992. And after that cup of coffee, we had another one, and a date followed, and things got pretty serious pretty fast between Linda and me. And by spring, we were making plans to go to Alaska so I could meet her parents, and then we'd take her to the East Coast where she could meet mine. And I didn't tell her this, but my plans also included finding a quiet moment alone with her parents where I could ask for their blessing, because I intended to ask Linda to marry me. So that was the plan anyway, but then about a month before we were supposed to go, my boss called me up and said she had an opportunity for me to travel to Alaska for work. And as long as I was going, why don't I take a couple of days to look around? So I would be going to Alaska a full month ahead of schedule without Linda, but meeting her parents nevertheless. I think she was a little bit nervous about her chatty city boyfriend going up there to meet her very reserved country folks. Her dad in particular, Boyd Bennett, who was a farm boy, a retired master drill sergeant in the Air Force, avid hunter, avid fisherman, fan of country music. His favorite drink was root beer, and if he could live his life over again, he wanted to be a truck driver. And he looked kind of like you might expect. He had a body of a bulldog. He kind of had a face like a bulldog, too. He had a handshake like a vice, and when he said, "Welcome to Alaska," to me, I wasn't sure if it was an order or if he was really welcoming me. But Boyd was a man whose actions spoke more than words did for him. He did make me feel welcome, and I was told by he and his wife Shirley that they weren't just going to show me around Anchorage for a couple of hours, which was all I could have hoped for. No, they were going to take me on a 3-day motorhome tour around the state. Just the three of us. And that's when I learned lesson number one about being an Alaskan. When family, when friends, when people you don't even know very well come up here, you show them a good time. You don't hold back. You show them why we live here. And we make sure they've gotten their money's worth for coming up here. So Operation Impress the Prospective In-Laws was underway. And the first thing we did was go to a restaurant where the waiter stepped up to the table and asked what we'd like to drink. And before anybody could say anything, I said, "You got root beer? I love me a tall glass of root beer." And sure enough, Boyd elbows Shirley and says, "This guy can't be all bad. He likes root beer." So we were off to a good start. We climbed into the motorhome. I'm not a big motorhome guy, but I got up there in the passenger seat and gave myself to the trip. Now, instead of just a brief moment of time, I had 3 days to talk about how I wanted to marry their daughter and wanted their blessing. Well, I in my excitement and my eagerness to get to know them better, I asked questions and made observations about everything. The fact that there were fast food restaurants in Alaska surprised me. The mountains, the rivers, the glaciers, even the mosquitoes. I said to Boyd, "You know, we drive and we drive and we get out of this thing and immediately we're just beset upon by mosquitoes. How did they know we were coming? What have they been doing all this time?" I still don't know the answer to that question. But at one point, he cuts me off and says, "You ask too many questions." And that's when I learned lesson number two about being an Alaskan, you know. There's nothing wrong with silence. And it was a good lesson for a kid from a big, boisterous family to learn. We spent so many hours hiking, fishing, on the road, on the ferry. You got to be comfortable with silence. And it was good that I learned that lesson, because by doing that, by settling down, it drew Boyd out, and he began to tell me about himself and about his decades living here. He'd had many adventures, many of them quite harrowing, and he seemed to know every single story of the bear maulings and the moose tramplings that had occurred in this state. And as he was wrapping up telling me about all these stories, he said, "You know, a lot of people worry that in Alaska they're going to get killed by wildlife, but really the only thing you need to remember is you don't want to get between a mama and her baby." So that was a good lesson for me. You don't want to get between an Alaskan parent and his offspring. And I decided at that point that I could wait. I'd be coming back in a month. I could find a quiet moment to ask Linda for her blessing, for ask her parents for their blessing to marry Linda. And I did, and they gave me their blessing. And 25 years went by in the blink of an eye. You know, we moved up here, we got married, kids, house, the whole bit. And I think over time, Boyd and I, despite our differences, we developed a deep affection and respect for one another. He would be 88 years old yesterday, but he died in May. And when I look back over all the fishing trips and motorhome trips and family gatherings we were able to enjoy together, I keep coming back for the most comfort to that motorhome trip, that first time we got to know each other. Boyd had pulled over to the side of the road to stretch his legs, and after hanging out in the motorhome for a minute, I got out of the motorhome, and of course, I immediately stepped out into a cloud of mosquitoes and started waving my hands around my head and broke into a run to get away from them. And I came over a rise and, you know, spectacular view of a mountain range. And before that, a braided river miles wide and a meadow of wildflowers leading up to the road. And despite that landscape, the thing that I was most struck by was my future father-in-law laying there in the grass, his back, hands behind his head. Now and then he'd brush a bug away. But he looked perfectly content and perfectly at peace. And I like to think of him in a place like that now. Thank you.
That is Tony Newman from the September 2016 episode of Mudrooms. Chichaco was the theme that night. And the next Mudrooms event is tomorrow night, Tuesday, the 14th, Valentine's Day, at Northern Light United Church. Starts at 7 p.m. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon.
Homecoming queen, ran in the leather high school football star, just living that small town dream. Yep. And Jesse went and joined the Navy after her and Terry broke up. Well, Charlie ran off the beach, ran into a big long line of bad luck. Everybody got the good days, bad days, up and down. We're all in the same world, spinning around, flying with the birds, singing with the stones. Dinner wants to smoke with Willie, and come to think of it, I do too. Yeah, Sally's gonna be a mama at the ripe age of 17, and my granddaddy's married to his sweetheart. She just turned 83. Everybody got the good days, bad days, up and down. We're all in the same world, spinning around, fighting with the birds, singing with the stones, living on prayers, keeping up with the Joneses.
From the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com. Support comes from the Juneau Economic Development Council, hosting the Innovation Summit on February 15th and 16th at Centennial Hall. The summit will focus on entrepreneurship and the innovation ecosystem in Alaska. A full agenda and tickets at jedc.org/innovation.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, February 13th. Scott Burton, your host. With me now on the show is Kara Durr. She is the Director of Public Engagement for the Alaska Food Coalition and the Food Bank of Alaska. Welcome to the show, Kara.
Thanks for having me.
Did I get your introduction right?
For the Food Bank of Alaska, we're a member of the Alaska Food Coalition, but close enough.
Okay, and we'll get to that in just a sec. There is a photography exhibit called Nothing Runs on Empty tomorrow night, Tuesday night, from 6 to 8 at the Hangar Ballroom. Why don't we start with this show? How did it come to be?
So we know that 1 in 7 Alaskans struggle with hunger, and that's a really high number. But, you know, we have found over the years that the diversity of experience is just really great. We wanted to kind of share some of those stories with the public. We know a lot of people struggle with hunger for different reasons, often it's circumstances out of their control. And we just wanted to kind of gather some of those stories, take some photos, kind of put a face to the issue of hunger.
Okay. And this is sort of part of an annual trip that you take to Juneau, is that right? So tell us, you know, a little bit more about the Food Bank of Alaska and how it relates to the Alaska Food Coalition.
So the Food Bank of Alaska is the statewide food bank. We have 5 partner distributing organizations, including the Southeast Alaska Food Bank here in Juneau. And we have about 300 partners statewide. So we work to distribute the federal food programs, and we serve mini pantries, soup kitchens, meal programs, things like that. And then the Alaska Food Coalition is kind of an independent anti-hunger coalition, and it's a place for, you know, the different entities to come together. And it's much broader than just those that are serving the hungry. We've got farmers, you know, legal services. It's a pretty wide coalition, and it gives the opportunity for us to come together and advocate for programs that matter to us and that affect hungry Alaskans.
And part of your trip right now is lobbying the legislature, is that right?
Yeah, so we come down every year. This year we have about 40 different advocates from around the state, and it's an opportunity for us to meet with legislators, let them know what's going on within their districts in terms of hungry people, what programs are being offered, and just kind of share with them, you know, the reality of hunger in our state.
What is the reality of hunger in our state? Do you have some statistics or maybe a story that can exemplify that?
Yeah, so, I mean, we know that 1 in 7 Alaskans struggle with food insecurity. It's about 106,000 Alaskans, and it's even higher, the rate among children, so it's about 20% of Alaskan kids struggle with hunger. You know, we were fortunate to get to work with partners all around the state and really just hear a very wide variety of stories of clients that they're serving. One particular one comes to mind. I was able to go out to St. Lawrence Island earlier this summer to the communities of Gamble and Savoonga, because we had really been hearing from a lot of people that those communities were struggling because they weren't catching the amount of walrus that they're typically able to, which is a big part of their diet. So they're kind of relying a little more heavily on the Emergency Food Assistance Program, which is a food box we send out there. And it was really amazing to go out there and hear their stories. You know, people talked about 5, 10 years, they said. One woman, Sandra, said, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, I would have never imagined to be in this situation, you know, before our freezers were full and now they're just empty.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about this photography exhibit that's tomorrow night.
So we've got about 40 photos and accompanying stories from all around the state, you know, villages from Anchorage, from the Matsu, Southeast. And what we're hoping to show is just kind of, again, the diversity of experiences of people who are struggling with hunger. You know, it could be how they came to be in that situation, what programs are helping them, just kind of their feelings on the matter. And then we've also got included stories, kind of more inspirational stories, stories of people who are helping to address the issue. So people who are advocating against hunger. People are volunteering, donating, things like that. And so, you know, the hope is that we can kind of inspire people. You know, hunger is a really big problem, but it is solvable, and, you know, it'll take all of us working together in a variety of ways, and we want to inspire people to take action.
Yeah, speaking of taking action, beyond going to this exhibit tomorrow night to raise our awareness, what should, you know, the general public, what should we be thinking about, and what can we do to help hunger in the state?
Well, certainly, we encourage people, you know, go and volunteer, find one of our partners in your community, help out, you know, donate to them. Of course, you know, we need funds. And finally, be an advocate, you know, and aside from the work of the food bank and our partners, we really rely heavily on the federal food programs. And so it's really important that we advocate that those programs maintain funding and are strengthened. So.
Okay. So again, this photography exhibit is tomorrow evening from 6 to 8, Tuesday night, at the Hangar Ballroom. Is there admission to get in?
It is free and open to the public. We will be glad to see everyone there.
Yeah. Thank you, Kara. Is there anything that we're missing?
I think we covered it.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show, Kara.
Thanks so much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 13th of February, 2017. It was on this date, 1633, Galileo Galilei was brought to Rome to face charges of heresy for teaching that the sun and not the earth was the center of the universe. He had studied the work of Copernicus, the Polish astronomer who'd put forward the theory that the earth was not even the center of the solar system. Galileo was found guilty of heresy, ordered to recant, and he did. He said, "I abjure, curse, and detest the aforesaid errors and heresies, and swear that in the future I will never again say or assert anything that might furnish occasion for a similar suspicion." It's the birthday of the mystery writer Georges Simenon, Belgian, born in Liège, 1903, wrote over 500 novels and short stories, many of them featuring the detective Jules Magrette, who enjoyed fine wine and his wife and solving cases by pondering human nature. Simenon could write 80 pages a day, sometimes finish the draft of a novel in 10 days. He said, "Writing is not a profession, but a vocation of unhappiness. I don't think an artist can ever be happy." It's the birthday of the religious historian Elaine Pagels, born in Palo Alto, California, 1943, author of the Gnostic Gospels, and especially the Gospel of Thomas, which says that Jesus is the one who reveals the divine light that brought the universe into being, and that you and I also reveal that light. And it's the birthday of the first man to travel faster than the speed of sound, Chuck Yeager, born in Myra, West Virginia, 1923. He did it in 1947, got up to an altitude of 45,000 feet, and 14 minutes later he was back on the ground. Here's a poem for today by Dorian Laux, Anti-Lamentation. "Regret nothing. Not the cruel novels you read to the end just to find out who killed the cook, not the insipid movies that made you cry in the dark in spite of your intelligence, your sophistication, not the lover you left quivering in a hotel parking lot, the one you beat to the punchline, the door, or the one who left you in your red dress and shoes, the ones that crimped your toes. Don't regret those. Not the nights you called God names and cursed your mother, sunk like a dog on the living room couch, chewing your nails and crushed by loneliness. You were meant to inhale those smoky nights over a bottle of flat beer to sweep stuck onion rings across the dirty restaurant floor, to wear the frayed coat with its loose buttons, its pockets full of struck matches. You've walked those streets 1,000 times, and still you end up here. Regret none of it. Not one of the wasted days you wanted to know nothing when the lights from the carnival rides were the only stars you believed in, loving them for their uselessness, not wanting to be saved. You've traveled this far on the back of every mistake, ridden in dark-eyed and morose, but calm as a house after the TV set has been pitched out the upstairs window, harmless as a broken axe, emptied of expectation. Relax. Don't bother remembering any of it. Let's stop here, under the lit sign on the corner, and watch all the people walk by. A poem by Dorian Laux, Anti-Lamentation, from the Book of Men, published by W.W. Norton & Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games, from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, February 13th. It's about 12 minutes until the top of the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon, live and local, here in the capital city. It's about 2 minutes until the top of the hour.
This is Bird Note. The common raven is our largest songbird, and it has a voice to match its size. We've visited ravens in the company of wolves, and in myth, taking control of the tides, changing the course of a river, even placing the sun in the sky. Ravens are seen as tricksters in many traditions. But ravens have their softer side, too. Common ravens probably mate for life. And in the same way that a human couple sometimes has to work to maintain their attachment, a pair of ravens exhibits behaviors that strengthen their relationship, or pair bond. Throughout the year, a pair of ravens may soar wingtip to wingtip, swooping in unison, tumbling through the sky. During courtship, the pair will often sit side by side, gently preening each other's feathers. And during that ritual, they may make these warbling sounds. Raven nestlings sometimes make this same sound after they've been fed. Compared to the usual raucous raven calls, this one is soothing to adults and to their young. It's called a comfort sound. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Thank you for tuning into a Juno Afternoon. I'll be your host again tomorrow, and we'll get to speak with poet Roger Reeves, who's in town for a reading at the Valley Library. And we'll talk with KJ Metcalf and Dan Monteith about the Friends of Admiralty, and we'll hear Writer's Almanac, Bird Note music, and more live at 3 on KTOO. And repeated at 4 on KRNN, and on demand, as always, at ktoo.org. Let's take a look at the weather here. It's currently 47 degrees at the Juneau International Airport, and the forecast for tonight calls for rain with lows around 42, east winds 25 to 30 miles per hour, and the chance of precipitation is 100%. Tomorrow calls for rain, highs near 43. Southeast winds a little bit lower, 15 to 20 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation is again 100%. And new precipitation amounts between a half and three quarters of an inch possible. Going into Wednesday, calls for rain, highs near 41, so it's cooling down a bit. Southeast winds around 15 miles per hour. And again, the chance of precipitation 100%. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.
What is civility? Does it matter? Are Alaskans more civil? The University of Alaska Southeast MPA program hosts a discussion of civility in the last frontier with Alaskan leaders Mayor Mike Navar, journalist Dermot Cole, and Senators Anna McKinnon and Berta Gardner. Join the discussion in person at 360 on February 23rd at 5:30 p.m. or join the discussion online at 360north.org.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translator.